Welcome to The Read-Along,
a mini book club for your ears.
I'm your host, Scott.
I'm your other host, Anita.
And join us on a journey through a good book,
one chapter at a time.
Do you like talking about movies? Do you like talking about mediocre movies? Do you like talking about how you could have fixed mediocre movies? Well, I certainly do, and you can listen to me, Scott C. Bourgeois, along with my co-hosts Greg Beaver and Liam Creswick, as we give our notes, and I have some notes. You can follow it now on your podcatcher of choice or support it by visiting patreon.com/ihavesomenotes. We finally did it. We successfully hosted Easter.
We Eastered, everybody.
Like a full week late.
Hey, it was necessary.
Yes. But we had family over. We successfully cooked a turkey.
Yes.
Which is good. Something we have not done before.
Well, no, it's not true. We have cooked a turkey before, but it was a long time ago and we kind of screwed it up.
Yeah. This time, we didn't screw it up as significantly.
We only screwed it up a little, and it was perfectly safe to eat. It just took longer to get there than we planned.
Yeah, the recommended cooking time was off by like 40 minutes.
And of course, and every time we mention that to someone, they're like, oh yeah, that's way wrong. And we're like, oh, okay,
well,
great.
Well, nobody informed us of that.
And we obviously didn't learn the lesson from the first time all those years ago.
Exactly.
So we'll try again, and we'll get it closer to right next time.
Indeed.
I hope.
Quite. So that's where we're at. We're riding the high of a successful family gathering.
Woo! Let's talk about a book.
Sure. That was an awkward segue, but fine. Starting with our previous chapter, I guess, a brief recap of chapter 15, in which the girls have an unexpected but slightly planned meeting with Detective Inspector O'Sullivan. And that it came together very quickly.
Yes.
But it was something they wanted to do.
Yes.
We get an opportunity to finally meet the Detective Inspector in person from Mallory's perspective, as she is our perspective character. We learn a little bit about her. She quickly figures out that Diana was lying to her when she first met her.
Wasn't that hard.
Then the girls put their heads together and try to stick what they believe might be the motive for the killings on their various suspects, and nothing super concrete comes together. And that leads us into chapter 16 of The Undetectables by Courtney Smith. This chapter begins with Cornelia bringing Beckett into the room.
Yeah. So I started my notes with, well, everyone is the worst.
Yeah, this is a super awkward encounter.
Oh, for absolutely everybody and on so many levels.
Yeah.
Okay, so Cornelia brings Beckett over.
Yeah,
to
because
house.
Naturally they want to talk to him about the night of Ben's killing.
Well, yeah, he was there. He's a suspect. It makes sense, even though Cornelia seems to be the only person who likes him at all, and we'll get into that in a minute. So he comes in and he's just the same as he was the first time we met him, super oblivious to everybody else, very insensitive to what's going on, and just an all-around jerk face.
Yeah, so if he was the king of bad first impressions, he's also the king of bad second impressions.
Just bad impressions every time.
Yeah, I want to say that he's like slightly less obnoxious in this chapter than he was in the first chapter, in that he's showing the bare level of like self-awareness, but like bare. If he was obnoxious at an 11 the first time we met him, he's now obnoxious at just a 10.
Just a 10.
Yeah,
yeah, just a 10. Fine. They're a little better braced because
yeah,
they know what they're getting into now, right? They've met him once, maybe.
Well, and Cornelia had suggested that he was more obnoxious at the bar because he was drunk, but
no, he's just as obnoxious sober, not in a nightclub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He comes across as someone who's very socially inept, and that may be an extension of just being painfully unself-aware.
Or, and I posited this when we were talking about it earlier, overly self-aware. Like, he's so focused on what is happening to him and, like, with him that he's not paying attention to anybody else.
Just totally lacks empathy.
At all.
Which is ironic for someone who is studying psychology.
Oh, that was an interesting thing that he said.
Yeah, Mallory was quite surprised by that as well, where it's like, oh, Psychology, you say?
So he's a psychology student who has absolutely no ability whatsoever to read the room.
No. And, I mean, again, Cornelia tries to soft pedal this as, well, you know, he's awkward around other people. Like, he's super chill with me, with people who he's, like, familiar with and who he has rapport with. But when he's meeting new people, his brain falls out. I think that's the actual term that the author uses there. And that might be the case, but, like, he can't, he just walks directly into his own mouth repeatedly over and over with both feet.
Yeah, it's not great.
He rubs everybody the wrong way.
Everybody.
And that includes Cornelia.
Yes. I do not understand the whole Cornelia Beckett thing still.
Neither does Mallory nor Diana.
Okay, so Diana can only handle Beckett for so long before she needs to take Cornelia downstairs for a, what did she say, for boring science stuff?
Yes.
And you can hear them having a screaming match in the basement.
Yep.
Great. Which leaves Mallory alone with Beckett, which we know nobody wants because Mallory doesn't like him very much either.
Well, and the shouting match stems from Beckett basically calling out the other two girls for, like, waiting on Mallory. Because he has apparently no idea that Mallory is, like, dealing with chronic pain and that the other girls are just accommodating her.
Yeah, they're just
so helping. So that things are easier for her. Something that Mallory is burning with shame about the moment it's pointed out. But nobody addresses it. And that raises the interesting question of, has Cornelia never talked about Mallory to Beckett?
Right? Does she not talk about her friends with him?
Like, granted, it's possible it just didn't come up because it's so far from Cornelia's mind as being a core part of who Mallory is, that she just never mentioned, oh, by the way, she has fibromyalgia and is in constant chronic pain. Possible.
Possible.
But it really does seem like maybe she's never really brought Mallory up with Beckett.
Which, weird, right?
Yeah, and I mean, also during the little altercation between the bunch of them upstairs, before Diana and Cornelia retreat downstairs, Cornelia just kind of wallflowers. Like, she does not take a side. She doesn't defend Beckett against Diana's overt hostility, but she doesn't back up her friends over Beckett's inability to, like, say basic things without being completely insulting and self-centered.
Right? She just disappears. Something else we were talking about earlier. Cornelia behaves so strangely with and towards Beckett. Beckett comes into this space and
instantly fills it.
Instantly fills it. We know Mallory doesn't like him. We know Diana doesn't like him. And all of a sudden, Cornelia is acting like she doesn't like him either. She doesn't talk about her friends to him. She doesn't try to justify him to her friends either.
She just kind of, like, mildly scolds him like he's a misbehaving dog.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Like, you watch her behave with her two best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of her other friends, right? Interactions mm-hmm. with Felix and Ben. And
she's very gregarious and outgoing.
Yes. And suddenly this guy shows up.
And she's, like, embarrassed.
Yeah. It's weird, right? It's weird.
Yeah.
By the time we get to the end of the chapter, it is super obvious that Cornelia is hiding something.
Yeah.
We just don't know what. Like, what is she doing with Beckett that needs to be so secretive from her friends?
Yeah. And, I mean, you've posited that there's something going on there that we're not being told about.
Yeah.
Because Cornelia is either not sure her friends will understand or is embarrassed about it.
Yes, probably.
And I think that you kind of hit the nail at least close to the head when you suggested it's something that she doesn't think they'll understand.
Probably. That strikes me as a very Cornelia way to be.
And I mean, we've posited that it's because she's been sharing magic with Beckett.
That's my guess. I don't think Beckett's connected to the murder, and neither does Mallory.
No, and that's perhaps the good segue to lead into the core of what Mallory and Beckett discuss when they're alone. Because Mallory takes this as the opportunity to kind of softly grill him. What were you up to the night of Ben's murder? What can you tell me about what's going on?
Yeah, what kind of things did you see from where you were?
Yeah, and he is not useless. Though he's not as useful as perhaps she was hoping he might be. First of all, he wasn't around during the murder, but that's because, as he says, he went to the washroom to cool down after the altercation with the fairies, splashed some water on his face. When he came out, chaos had already erupted. And if he seemed like he wasn't reacting to it, it's because he was trying to keep calm because he knew in a crisis situation, you should try to keep a level head. And that might help you, like, notice things that other people who are freaking out aren't going to notice. Unfortunately, he didn't notice anything.
So he was super proud of him standing around noticing things, but he is, like, the least observant person ever.
Yeah, he didn't notice anything at
so
all.
So he didn't notice a thing.
Mallory pivots to, okay, well, what were you doing on the night of October 2nd? And notes, Beckett doesn't react to the date at all. It's just a random day to him.
Yeah, he kind of thought back and went, I was out, like, camping with my buddy.
Yeah, he was off having, like, a, I'm going to call it, quote unquote, a religious experience.
Yes.
At a particularly auspicious location for vampire culture with a cousin of his. And that's what he was doing. According to him, that means that there's a potential witness to his alibi. If they can locate the cousin, which Mallory does think, I'll have to get Cornelia to follow up on that. But also, she notes he doesn't react to the date. Like, he doesn't get suspicious or defensive. He's just like...
He doesn't perk up. He just sort of thinks back. Yeah.
Those bits of information coupled with just his overall demeanor, Mallory gets kind of a read on Beckett here. And she's like, I don't think this guy's clever enough to be our killer.
So either he is putting on the best act ever...
He's either a criminal mastermind.
Yeah. Like, to two extremes. He's either a complete idiot or, like, an amazing actor and a high-level mastermind, and I don't think it's the latter.
Yeah, a dangerous mastermind or a harmless idiot.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about harmless, but, yeah, I don't think... I agree with Mallory in that I don't think Beckett is our killer.
Yeah, he straight up claims his motivation is to help people. He's a helper. That's why he's in psychology.
Yes.
Even though he seems very bad at it.
No one believes him for a second.
Yeah. So that's kind of the key things we get out of him about his alibi for the two murders. But he also brings up an interesting point that I want to get back to.
Okay.
We're gonna move on for the chapter. I'm going to put a pin in something and just kind of circle back to it at the end.
Yes, we'll put a pin in Beckett and we'll come back to him.
So Diana and Cornelia finish their screaming match and come back upstairs. A couple hexes have gone off apparently.
They had a little hex war downstairs.
In their hatred. Diana plucks a bit of his hair. To get a DNA sample.
Magically. Because he just goes, ow! Like, out of nowhere.
And then and is confused. And then later on, she produces a hair. So we can presume that's what was going on there.
Yeah.
And she admits it's not the best for DNA because it's hair, but it's better than nothing. It was something they could easily get.
Yeah, it's something they can test it.
But also, like, shuts Mallory down on trying to get any more work done. Like, Mallory is visibly drained from having had to share air with Beckett for a short time. And she's like, you need to... take a rest. You need to have a long rest, recharge your batteries. I'm going to put a blanket on you. You're going to go to sleep. We'll catch up with this tomorrow.
Yeah, lie down.
So Mallory does. She has potentially a shorter snooze.
We don't actually know. She wakes up later at a random time.
Yeah, and she's...
minutes, days, hours later, who knows?
She's groggy from the lengthy nap. She overslept longer than she probably meant to have like a rest.
Possibly.
So, and you know how when you oversleep on a nap, you wake up and you're super groggy?
Yep.
And that's kind of the state she's in. She heads upstairs. She decides she wants to, like, touch base with Cornelia because she hasn't had a chance to since talking to Beckett. She wants to, like, square up, maybe checking into his alibis. And she hears Cornelia in her room, like, chatting and giggling with someone.
Yeah, talking and laughing kind of thing.
It doesn't say who that is, but we can presume Beckett is still over.
Yeah, we can presume Beckett. It might be Diana. She might be on the phone. Like, we don't actually know.
Yeah, so rather than interrupt whatever's going on, Mallory hangs back, takes one of her beetles out of one of her terrariums
She goes into the bug room.
Yeah.
Right?
Just to, like, enjoy some warmth and stuff. And the beetle gets squirmy and, like, bites her. And she has this weird out-of-body experience where she instantly reacts and squishes it. And, like, part of her brain is going, no, this is bad. You should not be doing this. And that's the part of her brain that's watching her, like, react in that gut moment.
Yeah.
Because she's kind of at the end of her rope.
Yeah.
She's hit a bit of a breaking point. She's had a rough day. She still has all of this unresolved tension with her two best friends. And it all just kind of comes to a head here. And I think she does it partly because she just wants to hurt Cornelia.
Because she's tired of being hurt by Cornelia.
Yeah.
Even though Cornelia doesn't know it.
Yeah, because she won't tell Cornelia anything.
Because Mallory is horrible at dealing with her own stuff.
Yeah.
I don't mean to play armchair psychologist every single episode, but, like, Mallory, honey, get it together.
Talk to your friends.
It's not that hard.
Open up to them.
Apparently it is that hard because she refuses to do it.
Yeah.
And she would just rather wallow in her own, like, shame and self-loathing than deal with anything.
Well, and now she's lashed out. In a really destructive way.
Yes. There is going to be...
fallout.
So much fallout from this. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, But it's going to be there.
Yep.
It's going to be there. Because what happens after she kills the beetle she chose, we should mention, mm-hmm. was the queen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when Mallory squishes it and then for some reason puts it back in the terrarium, the colony loses its mind a little bit.
Yeah.
And goes through a whole lot of infighting.
Yep.
And like half of them are dead. So Cornelia is going to wake up to find the queen squished and half the colony gone. And she's going to be super duper upset.
Yeah. And it's like her prized beetle collection.
Right?
Like it's the...
These are the magic using beetles.
Yeah.
These are the forensic beetles.
Yeah. The most important beetles, arguably. So...
I know Mallory wasn't thinking.
She literally wasn't in that moment.
We were in her head the whole time. She genuinely wasn't thinking. But at the same time, like, Mallory, what? It is weird for me for a protagonist of the book to become less likable as we go along. I am getting so frustrated with Mallory.
Well, hopefully the pendulum swings back the other way.
I would hope so. I really do feel like we're building up to a great big fight.
Oh, yeah. It's going to happen.
A great big fight.
There's definitely one coming, probably in the next few chapters. Mm-hmm.
Probably between all three of them.
Oh, yeah. Diana's upset with Cornelia because of her weird and terrible relationship with Beckett.
Yes.
Mallory's upset with both of them for no reason that's really particularly good. For carrying on with their lives without her.
For daring to have lives.
She's
extra upset at Cornelia for being with Beckett because she has feelings for Cornelia that she will not openly acknowledge.
Nope.
It's all a big mess. It's all going to come to a head. And maybe somewhere in there, we might also solve a murder.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I wanted to circle back to that pin.
Oh, yes. Let's pull that pin.
There was one other thing that Beckett said during his conversation with Mallory that actually, like, twigged something for me. And it was like, hey, look, so... Yeah, okay, I crossed the fairies. I maintain it was not intentional and that they way overreacted. But again, I'm going to point out something I said at the bar, which was that they had all of this blood going on in their crazy stage show without any consideration to the vampires who might have been in attendance. And that is so typical of fairies. Everybody gives them all this hoity-toity consideration about their culture and their values and their customs. Nobody thinks twice about vampires. And you know why? Because vampires can't use magic. And in a culture, that makes us
invisible.
Beneath notice. It makes us invisible. And Mallory, on the one hand, is like, you're a jerk. And on the other hand, is like, you're a jerk who kind of has a point.
You're a jerk with a point.
And she actually has, almost much to her own chagrin, like a little moment of connection with Beckett there.
Yep.
Because she is someone who has diminished magical capabilities because of her condition. And she has felt that. She has kind of felt invisible in her community because of that. And even amongst her friends because of that.
Yes.
She can relate in that moment. That is interesting to me because it made me think back to what we were talking about last episode. About how I think someone like Jacob, another character who's in the mix, who's been around, should be up on the suspect board.
Uh-huh.
And you know why he's not?
Because he's an apparent.
Because he's an apparent, and it's occult murders. So he is beneath notice.
Mm-hmm.
He is just someone in the background. They haven't even considered the possibility that an apparent could be involved in the murders. And this leads me to me making a case against Jacob the apparent as a serious suspect in this case. Number one, he is involved with the nightmare. He is around. He is involved in the local politics. But again, because he's an apparent, he's beneath notice. Number two, apparents can use magic items. We know this. Theodore uses one in the prologue chapter. He uses a witch light to go downstairs. If it's magically imbued, he could be using the deadly dagger of deadly death as a weapon without having to be able to use his own magic to do it.
Right.
Number three, he had a really flimsy excuse for leaving the night that he showed up to chat with the girls and be like, hey guys, sorry, I'm not going to be able to help you out with your investigation anymore because I'm really bad at lying. And he was dressed down like someone who might be going to a club. And glanced at the clock and went, shoot, I have to go meet my girlfriend. And that seems like a plausible thing that he might have to do, except what happens later on? He shows up with the nightmare at the club.
Yeah.
Wasn't he supposed to be with his girlfriend? Also, during that meeting, Theodore notes he's got a cut on his hand.
Mm.
Gives him a Band-Aid. He's playing with a scab that Courtney Smith makes sure to point out. Something that somebody wielding a deadly knife of deadly death might have accidentally nicked themselves.
Maybe.
Could have a cut on their hand.
No, we talked about, I know we talked about this before, maybe not in this detail, but Jacob is absolutely on our suspect board.
Yeah.
And honestly, the case for him grows stronger as we eliminate other suspects.
Yeah. I'm not quite ready to accuse him outright of being the murderer.
No jacuzzi just yet.
But he is up on my suspect board. And I think that what Beckett says in this chapter underscores, interestingly, that he's not on their suspect board because he's an apparent.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I want to say you and I discounted him off the top anyway because we assumed that with a magical murder, it needed to be a member of a culture. So a magic user.
Yeah.
Who was committing these crimes. But as you pointed out, if an apparent can use a magical item without having magic of their own.
And they're supposing that the magic item is responsible for the murders.
Then, yeah, maybe we need to include an apparent suspect.
And he's the only one in the story. And the laws of the conservation of narrative indicate that
yes.
It's a little late for them to introduce a new apparent suspect at this time.
Exactly. So,
indeed. So just putting it out there. Just putting it out there.
We could be incredibly wrong. We frequently are.
Irresponsible speculation is the very foundation of this podcast.
But at this point, what we're saying is Jacob at least stays up on the board.
Yeah. With that all said, we'll see if we find out some more information or if there's some emotional fallout to some insecticide, some coleoptericide, in chapter 17 of our novel, which you'll want to read up on in time for next week. In the meantime, of course, as always, you can give us a little rating and review.
Oh, we always appreciate those. Please and thank you.
You can also reach out to us on social media.
Absolutely. We are on Instagram, Facebook, X, Goodreads, and Blue Sky. We are at the read along on any of those where you need an at.
You can also send us an email.
Yes, please do. You can find us at thereadalong@gmail.com.
And with that said, as always, we love you very much and we'll see you next time.
So many dead bugs.
Thank you for joining us on The Read-Along with your hosts, Anita and Scott Bourgeois. All Read-Along music is by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Cover art is by Aaron Beaver. Be sure to join us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Read-Along, and check out our group on Goodreads.com.